Sudhe, Taptakan Shena Gaurangi, Radhe Vrindavaneshwari, Vrishubhanu Sukadevi, Pranamami Ri Priye, Vantagapa Dhruvyascha, Kripasudhivyascha, Padnamavamayo, Vaishnavayamonaha, Shri Krishna Chaitanya Pranitananda, Shedvaitita Dharashiva Sri Gaurabhakarunda, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Rama. Om Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate 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 Vasudevaya.
Something from the Bhagavad Gita.
From the Bhagavad Gita in English?
Oh, we have one.
So I'm going to read from the Bhagavad Gita as is, chapter 4, Transcendental Knowledge, text number 2. Evam param prapta, imam rajarshyo vidu, sakalene ha mahata yogo nashta parantapa. This supreme science is thus received through the chain of the simple succession, and the saintly kings understood in that way. For the course of time, the succession was broken, and therefore the science as it is appears to be lost. Purport is clearly stated that the Gita was especially meant for the saintly kings because they were to execute the purpose in ruling over the citizens. Certainly Bhagavad Gita was never meant for the demoniac persons. It would dissipate its value for no one's benefit and would devise all types of interpretations according to personal whims. As soon as the original purpose was scattered by the motives of the unscrupulous commentators, there arose a need to reestablish the disciplined succession. 5,000 years ago, it was detected by the Lord himself that the disciplined succession was broken, and therefore he declared that the purpose of the Gita appeared to be lost. In the same way, in the present moment also, there are so many editions of the Gita, especially in English, but almost all of them are not according to the authorized disciplined succession. There are innumerable interpretations rendered by different mundane scholars, but almost all of them do not accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, although they make a good business on the works, on the words of Sri Krishna. This spirit is demoniac. Because demons do not believe in God, but simply enjoy the property of the Supreme. Since there is a great need of an edition of the Gita in English, as it is received by the parampara, the simple succession system, an attempt is made herewith to fulfill this great want. Bhagavad Gita, accepted as it is a great boon to humanity, but if it is accepted as a treatise of philosophical speculations, it is simply a waste of time. So the verse again, Evam parampara praptam, imam rajarshyo vidu, sakalene ha mahata yogo nashta parantapa. The supreme science is thus received through the chain of the simple succession, and the saintly kings understood in that way. But in the course of time, the succession is broken, and therefore the science as it is appears to be lost. Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutaye Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swamita Namane Namaste Sarasutam Deve Gauravani Bracharne Nirvishesha Shunivadi Paska Dhyade Satana. This is the beginning of the chapter on transcendental knowledge. In the Bhagavad Gita, later on, Krishna will say in this chapter that api pichit sarva papebhyo sarva bhyak karma kritamaha sarvan Api ched Gainaina, Vrijanam Santarishasi. Then this world, there's nothing so sublime and pure as transcendental knowledge. Pichat asi papebhyo, sarvebhyo papakritamaha, sarvam gyanaplanevaiva, Vrijanam Santarishasi. Even if you consider the most sinful of all sinners, when you are situated in the boat of transcendental knowledge, you'll be able to pass over the ocean of eternal miseries. Itai damsi samridom vinera basmat satkuru terjana kanagni sarvakarmani basmat satkuru te tata. As a blazing fire turns firewood to ashes, so does the fire of transcendental knowledge burn to ashes all the reactions to our accumulated activities. Hi gyanena sadrisham pavitramiha vidite tat svayam yogasam sira kalena atmani vidite. In this world there is nothing so sublime and pure as transcendental knowledge. This knowledge is the mature fruit of all Vedic wisdom, and one who enjoys this enjoys itself within himself in due course of time. This is the science of the disciple succession. Conveys the science of basically two things. One, knowledge of the self, that we're spiritual beings, and the other is knowledge of the Supreme Self, Krishna. In other words, we're trying to take shelter of Krishna, and by taking shelter of Krishna, we can realize that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Realizing that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we can get some experience how he's full in six opulences, especially knowledge, because although Krishna may be unlimitedly beautiful, unlimitedly strong, unlimitedly wealthy, unlimitedly famous, unlimitedly renounced, but our direct experience with Krishna is generally first through his knowledge given in Bhagavad Gita and given through the simple succession. With that knowledge, we can come to realize Krishna and gradually have some experience that Krishna is actually the reservoir of pleasure and all beauty. But we approach Krishna still through the disciple succession, and as Prahlad Maharaj told Lord Nrisimhadev, it is not that when we realize Krishna, then we throw the spiritual master away and the devotees away, and then it's just me and Krishna. I forget about everyone else. They're just whatever they may be. But actually in the spiritual world, there's Krishna and then there's a lot of devotees. We can't think that it's just going to be me and Krishna and everyone else is just paraphernalia, decoration. Therefore, taking shelter of the disciple succession, especially someone like Prabhupada, who is the reservoir, who is the actual full representation of the parampara system, the knowledge coming down parampara, and one who is fully in contact with Krishna, then obviously he knows the science of Krishna consciousness. Therefore, by taking shelter of Prabhupada, one naturally is all simultaneously taking shelter of other members of the disciple succession. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada, Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Srila Jagannath Das Babaji, the six Goswamis, the Panchatattva. That as soon as you take shelter of one of them, especially the current representative, then automatically you're taking shelter of all of them. And when we approach Krishna through the ecstasy coming from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, feeling intense separation from Radha and Krishna and Vrindavan, when we're under the protection of the disciple succession, then we get directly Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's association, and in that ecstasy of separation, we're actually in Vrindavan with Radha and Krishna. Therefore, pleasing the current representative, and of course, Prabhupada also has his representatives, who are supposed to teach us how to take shelter of Prabhupada's teachings, because Prabhupada's books are the basis of the movement, Prabhupada said, for the next 10,000 years. And after that, it's better if we're not around to find out what happens. In any case, if we, the current representatives are also meant to show us how to take shelter of Prabhupada, because unless Prabhupada's in the picture, then the rest of the disciples' succession won't be in the picture. And if they're not in the picture, the six Goswamis won't be in our picture. And if the six Goswamis not in our picture, the Panchatattva won't be in our picture. And if the Panchatattva are not in our picture, then even we try to approach Radha and Krishna and Vrindavan, it won't be in the mood of loving separation from them, but it'll be in some other mood, which will not give us the full ecstasy of associating with Radha and Krishna and Vrindavan. We won't be able to understand the mood of service, which is necessary to actually enter into their pastimes. Their pastimes is simply that of ecstatic service, desire to serve out of love, and unless we develop that same mood by taking shelter of the super succession, well, it all remains very theoretical. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada said, it's just like if you want to taste honey, but you have the bottle closed and you're simply licking the glass, it won't be possible to taste what's actually inside. Similarly, without that service attitude. And of course, what is the service attitude towards Prabhupada? Prabhupada wanted so many things, but it was all centered around making the atmosphere suitable to chant Hare Krishna and to spread Krishna consciousness. For instance, Prabhupada wanted Gurukul. So somehow or another, in some parts of the world, either consciously or unconsciously, they've concluded that it's too difficult, Gurukul. It's much easier, or it's only the only alternative to send our children to the regular schools, and what else can you do? Of course, that may be true, but when you have hundreds and thousands of people thinking like that, there's probably some other alternative. They actually try to think in a different way. They've more or less concluded that it's not practical. Of course, Prahlad Maharaj didn't think it wasn't practical. Although he grew up in a home where he had his father was a child abuser. And although his mother couldn't really protect him, his mother did happen to bring him to a great sage even before he was born. Therefore, he got some impetus for devotional service. But somehow or another, Hiranyakashipu was too uncontrolled. Actually, his mother couldn't really do it very much. Anyhow, it's the first instance of child abuse in our movement. But still, Prahlad he tolerated it, and he went on to become a great devotee. Because Palmara Acharat Pragyo Dharman Bhagavati Iha. From the very beginning, and even before the beginning of his birth, he had heard about Krishna. His mother wasn't watching television. She didn't go to the movies while her husband was away. She didn't go to the discotheque. She simply sat in the ashram of Narada Muni. And I imagine it must have been about 100 years of the demigods. So that was quite a long lecture she sat through. Of course, she may have fallen asleep, but luckily Prahlad within her womb was fully awake, and he heard for 100 years of the demigods the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And he had become a great devotee. And not only he became a great devotee, but he was inspired to preach that message to his classmates under very extreme circumstances. After all, it wasn't a Gurukul, actually. It was a regular Karmi school, run by two Karmis, Sunda and Amarka. But still, he was able to act as a secret agent for Vishnu, and he preached Krishna consciousness and converted all the little demons into devotees. Otherwise, children grow up and they learn that ultimately everything is godless. And even they want to become devotees, then they have to spend so much time trying to forget about all the things that they learned previously. We don't find that the demons are thinking that, let my son or daughter go to the Gurukul, learn to become a devotee, and in the future, if they want to become demons, they'll be able to become demons when they grow up. But the devotees sometimes think, let my son and daughter go to the normal school, and if later on they grow up, if they want to, they become devotees. No, we should not be so liberal, more liberal than the Asuras are. Instead, we should assure that our children from the beginning of life try to become devotees, and later on, when they decide to do something else, that will be their free will. It's called don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Certainly there were mistakes, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't learn from the mistakes. That the purpose of life is to become conscious of Krishna. And if we learn so many other things, other than Krishna being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then it will be very difficult to take shelter of Krishna in a sincere way later on in life. We'll be too bewildered by so many other material desires. Similarly, Prabhupada started things like farm communities. The idea is that every society needs an economic basis. It is very difficult to figure out the current economic basis. I was reading today that there was a scandal that Barclays Bank is involved in, and ultimately the scandal involves many banks, and the total sum of the money that's in question is $800 trillion, which is about, I forget how many times it is the total amount of gross national product that the whole world produces every year. So I don't know if it's 10 times or something more than that. I think America has around $8 trillion gross national production, and the rest of the world has maybe 2 or 3 times that. Say 25 trillion dollars or $30 trillion. So that's like 25 times. So in 25 years, that's what the whole world will produce. $800 trillion. And that's only one of the many scandals that are going on. It all has to do with interest. That they determine, I take a loan out for, say, $10 million, and I determine that in the future I'll pay 6% interest. But if in the future, when they decide the interest is actually 5%, well, then I pay a company, and the company, if it's 5% interest, then I give them, the company, $100,000, because it's 1%, instead of 6%, it was only 5%. And if it goes up to 7%, then the company has to pay, the company that I took the insurance out for 6%, pays $100,000 to the other company. Anyhow, it's rather complicated. But as it winds up, it was all being rigged. People would take out insurance for, say, on a $10 million loan, that it would be 6%, but the people running the whole thing made sure that it was like 7%. So they got $100,000 out of every $10 million that was passed between the banks. So in the course of years, it comes out to trillions of dollars that they were cheating everyone out of. But the whole world is full of cheaters. And therefore, we have a piece of paper, like an American dollar or a euro, and you think it's worth something, but actually it's a piece of paper based on debt. It's a piece of paper that says we're in debt to the National Reserve Bank for so much money. It's a crazy system. American government goes to a private bank called the Federal Reserve Bank and has made a contract with them that they are able to print up the American reserve currency. It's just a private bank. Just like they just get a contract with the American government. So to print up the money, which they're doing absolutely nothing, just printing it up, they get a certain percent of interest on everything that they print up. Usually it's called a criminal racket if anyone else did it. Immediately they would be surrounded by the army and the navy and the air force. But because there are somehow or another there's honor among thieves, they're able to print up this money, and actually the United States government, they're in debt to the Federal Reserve Bank to printing up their own money. So they have to pay them back a certain amount of money. Now the debt is up to $14 trillion. And they do nothing but print the money. And then the American worker, he gives so much tax, that the tax simply goes to pay the debt back. And what happens to the rest of the Federal Reserve Bank prints up the money, gives it to the banks, and the banks loan it out to people at some extraordinary rate, interest rate. And they can do it sometimes 90% of what's in the bank. So they're making out of nothing. They didn't do anything to create the money. It was just a piece of paper or even electronic, something entered into a computer, and suddenly they're getting all these people working for them day and night, simply based upon a system which has no basis in reality. It's just a mental concoction. And as long as people don't know that they're slaves to a piece of paper that has no backing to it other than some manipulation, not even a piece of paper anymore. Someone just enters, we'll loan you $25 trillion and this, if they have the power to just type in $25 trillion, they just made $25 trillion out of nothing. I mean, wouldn't that be nice? You get up in the morning and instead of going to work, you just type in how much money you want to earn that day. I think I'll earn $5 million. And you just type it in. Oh, I guess that was pretty hard work, but I just add another zero. So Prabhupada wanted farm communities where we could actually get something of value, namely food. We can grow our own food, have cows, live a simple life, not worry about how many digits people are typing into their computer today. Because we may work for $100 or 100 euros today, but if tomorrow they type in 100 euros into their computer, then our 100 euros is only worth 50 euros. Because now there's 200 euros in circulation, but there's the same, say, video which costs 100 euros, but now there's 200 euros competing for that 100 euro video, so now it's gone up to 200 euros. Now our 100 euros is only worth 50 euros. We have to get another 100 euros to buy it. So we can't compete against people who can just type in numbers into a computer and create their own money out of nothing. Then every time they do that, that everyone else's money becomes has less value. So in such a system, only a few people are the winners. The people who have the computers, they can create money out of nothing. Everyone else has to work for actually whatever they get. But they can't type corn into the computer and get some corn. Therefore, better we manufacture corn. We work for getting corn, because now it's all genetically modified. Before they run out of real seeds, and everyone's eating some corn, which is something other than just corn. But corn or wheat or cucumbers or lettuce, tomatoes, better we work for that than just working for a piece of paper, which becomes less and less value as they manipulate the economy more and more. So Prabhupada wanted farm communities where you could have cows which produce milk. There's no factory that's producing milk. Only the cows producing milk. And ultimately, all these different technological developments, if they run out of milk and food, wheat and grains and vegetables, you know, they haven't made any edible iPods yet. You can't put the iPod into the ground and it'll grow into an apple tree. They say the company's called Apple, but there's probably not one apple in the whole company. It's a virtual apple. And Prabhupada established other activities such as theater and art, but all based upon convincing people that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He was able to inspire artists to make pictures for his books. He was able to print the books, inspire people to distribute the books. He was able to inspire theater and music and so many different things, all with the aim of convincing people that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If we can see what our talents are, what our abilities are, what our inclinations are, and then try to fit into that movement that Prabhupada started. It was actually a movement to convince people about Krishna consciousness. It's not just a movement where people get together and they lament about the good old days, thinking that Prabhupada came and left, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came and left, and Krishna came and left, and here we are now. No, they never really came and left. The question is when we're going to come. They're still here. They're here in the holy name. They're here in their deity forms. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is there whenever there is chanting Hare Krishna, Sankirtan, following the footsteps of the previous acharyas. They all come if we're following their instructions. And then the result is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates come. And then Krishna is there too with his eternal associates. If we see how we fit in, do some service, then we'll gradually take shelter of the previous acharyas. Prabhupada said in one lecture, if you come to Mangalarti, because Srila Rupa Goswami has said we should get up early in the morning and come to Arti. So if you do that, and he said, then you're serving the lotus feet of Srila Rupa Goswami. So it's not that they're all somewhere distant and we're here fighting against Maya by ourselves. But actually, we have to take shelter of them by following their instructions, and then gradually we'll be able to remember them. And as we remember them, we'll actually be able to associate with them. And by associating with them, we'll get the full mercy of the Panchatattva and actually feel the separation that they're feeling, and therefore directly associate with Radha and Krishna and their associates in Vrindavan. And that way we'll be able to effectively spread the Sankirtan movement, because we'll actually know what the Sankirtan movement is. We can simply talk about bliss and knowledge, eternal bliss and knowledge. Unless we're experiencing it ourselves, it won't be very effective trying to distribute it to others. Otherwise, it's just like distributing a blank check. Here's a blank check. Here's a check for $5 million or €5 million. And don't worry about it. In 2 years, there'll be money in the bank. You accept it and just give me a small amount in return. But if we actually have 5 million euros in the bank, then people will actually be able to appreciate that they were actually giving to them something valuable. If we ourselves are practicing Krishna consciousness and are able to take shelter of the acharyas and their instructions and engage in their service, then the result is, to that extent, the whole system of parampara will be able to associate directly with them, the six Goswamis and the Panchatattva, and therefore when we're giving people knowledge about Krishna consciousness, we'll be able to experience ourselves what is the actual fruit of devotional service, namely directly experiencing the happiness that everyone's feeling, all the eternal associates are feeling in service to Krishna and his eternal servants. Then we'll be happy and we'll know the secret of making others happy, because there's no amount of technological advancement, there's no psychological process, there's no mundane arrangement can actually make anyone happy. It's only if we actually learn the science of how to associate with Krishna in the mood of loving separation, as demonstrated by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his eternal associates coming in parampara. So I'll stop there. Any questions? Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj, for the lecture. I have one question. It's a practical question. You were talking about banks.
Are you working for banks?
Yeah. Yeah, what does that mean for me? Should I leave the job?
Is that what you're doing, printing up money?
No, I'm not printing. I'm giving loans to people and then I'm wanting interest on that.
Do you get it yourself personally? Do you make it get a percentage of the interest?
Or you just get a reward.
You get a salary.
Yeah,
anyhow. So you should use it for Krishna's service. Otherwise, practically all the jobs, unless you can get a job on an ISKCON farm community or something, you know, like that, then at least give the results, some of the results, as much as possible to Krishna. The whole world is full of cheaters and cheaters. What else to do? But what I described, is that accurate? About the banking system?
More or less, yes. They're bringing more money than there's goods, and when they bring more money, the inflation comes, which makes the money worth less. So
yeah, that's one way they manipulate the market. The other way is they can also deflate the money, withdraw it, and therefore no one can pay their bills. Because no one can pay their bills, therefore they just confiscate everyone's property. It's quite a... Either way, they know how to manipulate things. They've been doing it for hundreds of years. And once they went off the gold standard, or any kind of standard, then it just became that much more easy to manipulate everything.
But how did the economy work before, in Vedic times?
Mostly barter. They had some gold and some barter. There wasn't any need for any big industry. Because mass production means mass credit in order to finance it. But they had no need for that, because what if they had to manufacture? They just wanted to, they were happy being Krishna consciousness for the most part. Of course, the demons, they had big armies because they wanted to conquer. So there must have been, you know, some kind of... They had cows and they had land and they had some jewels and gold and things like that. So on that basis they formulated big armies. But Krishna wasn't very happy about that, because that wasn't very Vedic, and therefore he annihilated so many armies to bring peace back to the earth. But basically, if you go to the local, just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he went to Navadvip, and there, as a Brahmin, people gave him donations. He got, you know, his hair cut, he got some food, and he got just a little bit. Apparently someone would, I cut your hair and you give me some of your produce. There was bartering going on.
The taxation as such was in place, I guess, for the old kings.
But their tax was just like Nanda Maharaj, he brought milk products for the king. He didn't have to bring, you know, his bank account. He brought milk products. Because food is the basis. And of course, when there was extra food, milk products or ghee or whatever, because they used to turn it to ghee, which was more stable, then they used to get other things like clothing and silk and ornaments. So people, that was what they were interested in. Now, most of it's all just, the so-called wealth is in these cars and these horrible buildings that people live in. So land, they just inflate the price of land and people think they're rich. It's just the same piece of land. But because it's in the middle of some horrible city, therefore it's supposedly worth a lot. But actually, they're living in hell. They're paying a lot of money to live in hell, renting out an apartment from the devil. Can't breathe the air, there's no fresh water. The food is all preserved. There's nothing good about the whole place. But they have some mental concoction that it's worth something. Therefore, anyone who buys a piece of land in hell, he has to pay a lot for it. I'm in the 120th floor of hell. I paid $1 million for it. So it's just an idea that there's so much wealth going on. Where is the wealth? No fresh air, no clean water, no fresh food, no nice relation with people. There's nothing except for some plastic and iron. And everyone's being surveyed. You have your iPod or your iPhone, and someone's on the other side just watching, recording everything you're doing. And you call up and, you know, you can go on the internet and find out how everyone's being exploited. Which war is going on, which land is being liberated. And they think that's wonderful. And then you can go to the movies for entertainment and see how people are eating, sleeping, mating, and defending and spending $1 billion to, you know, create some kind of movie to do the same things everyone else is doing, but in 3D. And people think that's entertainment. They're going, you know, the same thing you're eating, sleeping, mating, and defending every day in 3D. And then you go to the movie and pay money to see how someone else is eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. And if it's in 3D, then you pay even more. So actually the society is just working hard for practically nothing. People feel fortunate if they have a place to sleep and some food. The squirrel in the forest around here, he doesn't have to get a PhD or an MD in order to get a little hole in the ground and something, a couple of acorns to eat. He doesn't have to worry about the other squirrels inflating the price of acorns. So now he has to work during the winter to collect, to pay for his acorns. It's all a false manipulation. Just making everything complicated. Anything else? Yes.
I was thinking about it, the kind of farm communities. So I was wondering, as a human beings, we do have these kind of very primitive workers.
Yeah, so we should try and establish a farm community and produce at least fruit.
How is it if, like, if the land belongs to, I was feeling if land belongs to persons who work on it, and generally the human beings who are fruitive, they will be more inspired to work nicely, that it will produce more.
Not necessarily.
No.
That's some kind of theory that in our ISKCON they came up with this idea that Prabhupada had said that possession turns sand into gold. But actually, if you look up in the folio, Prabhupada said the exactly opposite. For the materialists, they can turn sand into gold by proprietorship. But for a devotee, we're not interested in that. We're interested in trying to do something to please Krishna. And if we become Krishna conscious, that will turn our sand-like consciousness into the golden consciousness of Krishna. Otherwise, everyone is trying to get everything they can for themselves, selfishness. That will not produce Krishna consciousness. We're not interested in big, big fruits. We're interested in becoming Krishna conscious. This idea that we're going to become the biggest karmis in the world and everyone will surrender to us. No, we can't compete with the materialists. And if we try to, then we wouldn't have any Krishna consciousness either. But for those who are very much interested in getting big, big results from their activities, and probably wanted them to at least utilize those results in Krishna service. But he was never interested in stressing that we have to get more and more fruits from our work. We have to become more and more Krishna conscious by what we're doing. Anything else?
I would like to discuss something. I noticed that Indians, by nature, they like to exaggerate things. I don't know if it's in their blood or something, but how do we know that what does it mean somebody is Krishna? Like we always say, that is already Krishna. Although he never said, I am Krishna. He made a perfect example to you of being the humblest Krishna's here, Chaitanya servant. But how do we know that? Why so many people promote the great acharyas that they are God, they are Krishna?
Whoever said the great acharyas were Krishna?
Yeah, Chaitanya.
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he never said the great acharyas were Krishna. They're servants of Krishna.
I know one group in from Croatia who understand that everything is Krishna. Krishna is every flower, every bud.
It's Krishna's energy.
Yes.
Therefore, it's not different from
Krishna. They promote this is also Krishna.
Well, we're not representing them. We're representing Prabhupada and our disciples' succession. We don't really care what they say. We hear what Krishna says through our parampara. According to our parampara, everything is the energy of Krishna, but Krishna is still a separate person.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, everything is simultaneously one but different from Krishna.
I said I'm different and I said I'm the same.
Same in quality, but it's not Krishna, it's Krishna's energies. Just like heat and light are not different from the fire, but heat and light are not fire. Fire is a fire, and heat and light and heat are heat and light. But they're not different from the fire, because they come from the fire. But obviously, if you have a light bulb burning in this house, it's not the same thing as the sun from which the light came from.
I heard many times that Vishnu is also Krishna, and even
those are expansions of Krishna.
What?
Expansions. They're not different from Krishna. Just like the judge, he has a certain uniform, and they call him Your Honor. But when he comes home at night, he takes off his uniform, and his wife and children bring his slippers and a robe. They call him John. So he looks different. He has a different name. He has different activities, but still he's the same person. Mm-hmm. So Krishna and Vishnu are the same person, although they may look slightly different. They have different names and they have different activities, but it's still Vishnu is Krishna acting in a different way.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Adios.
Thank you.
All right. Kuala. Grantaraj, Shri Mad Bhagavad Gita Kijai. Srila Prabhupada Kijai. Gaur Premanande.
Yeah.